All right, anything you don't want to talk about?
Yes. Silence. I don't want to talk about silence.
Shocking.
No, anything. Nothing is sacred, and I dare you to show me that it could be.
Okay. Because my co-host is gone for the day.
With my mouth?
Sure.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's what I told everybody. I'm like,
luck.
Here's the deal. And he's like, good morning, Ted. Now I'm going to sit back and cash a check.
Plus, I'm stoned on emotion right now.
Shocking.
Paul, we had to leave our dogs at home.
Kind of shit
and
is
I'm telling you, Happy and Sadie, get over here, sexy. If I get the finest ass wench for a wife or what?
See, here's the thing.
This is the thing.
There's a fine line between.
There is no fine
decorum.
Line.
It's
a broad chasm.
She's classing
she's
the place
so
up.
Fine.
Is what I'm saying.
I'm
she's so fine.
No, it's filthy. Is
I do
what
that
I'm
all the time with my husband.
Of course, you do.
I ask him what to wear, and then I look at him for advice, and he's got cut off. Camouflage shirt. So
well, not today. This shirt
this
I bought
up.
In Hoedspruit, yes. South Africa, in July of 1989. And I'm getting some
and
mileage
this is
out
what he
of it.
Wears sure. Every day, no matter
not
what
every
the
day.
Occasion.
It's one of two things.
One
I
of
wear
two shirts.
Least.
You're one of those guys that has a closet full of camo and camo.
No closet full. No, just one camo shirt
until
one
it falls off.
Rock. I really apologize for that toxic gas. But anyhow, this is Mrs. Nugent, the Queen of the Forest, the author of 4 minutes a day, rock and roll your way to happy. And as we get here to Phoenix, Arizona, you can tell we're a little schnookered. We're a little bit zombied. We got a little bit of an emotional intoxication going on because we left our dogs and we hate to leave happy and Sadie. We are
Sadie. Sadie.
Well, she's Sadie when we left. So we are so attached to our dogs that it was actually, you know, and I don't want to sound like a wimp because I'm anything but a wimp. But in the context of our life, we love those. Are you kidding me?
Look at that.
We didn't invent cute, but we have perfected it.
Yes.
Look
so,
at you.
So I'm high because we're about to baptize the world with the greatest guitar tone and the greatest band. And I'm talking about it on your radio show, Paul. So this is how I get high. I'm higher than a kite right now.
All right. I'm going for the kill shot right out the beginning.
You're
going
to do what now?
How? I'm going for the kill shot.
All right, go for it.
Right from the beginning.
Kill shot. I am your double lung.
I'm going to ask you this because you said there's nothing I could say to offend you.
Absolutely, you can.
All right. How much has your musical reputation suffered because of your mouth?
None whatsoever to real music lovers.
Right.
To people who don't care about the music and live lies and live hate and adhere to the Saul Alinsky propaganda ministry. They don't have anything to do with my music. Now, if you want to talk sheer sales, I suspect some of those dope-smoking mutants abandoned me because I'm against dope-smoking mutants. And I think that if you intentionally choose to be a liability in life, I don't really want you to buy my product because my product is about working hard, playing hard, shit kickers who live it up beyond your wildest imagination to be the best that they can be. And they know that the American dream demands that we, the people, participate in this hard-earned experiment in self-government where freedom is not free and some hero of the U.S. military has come home in a box again today so that we can speak our mind and adhere to the Constitution. And here's one for you. Earn your own way. Is that still legal in America? Well, according to the Obama gang of sheep and the Hillary Clinton felon patrol, and of course Bernie Sanders, my favorite Mao Zedong wannabe, earning your own way is actually condemned and frowned upon because if you don't earn your own way, you just sleep in, smoke some more dope, and we'll get you some Paul's income, because you don't have to earn your own. You get some of Paul's money.
No, the key word is Paul Tree.
Paltry.
You did radio. You know what this is. That's why you're back on stage every night.
Well,
yeah.
So the answer to your question is I could give a flying rat's ass if someone doesn't support my career or my life because they're living the lie and they don't believe in earning your own way. They don't believe in the right to keep and bear arms. They don't believe that Venice is the most pure, natural, environmentally beneficial nutrition available to mankind. Those are the people that hate me, and I couldn't be more proud that such subhuman mongrels hate the man who's living his dream each and every day. You might want to call 1-800-NUMBNUT and see if Michael Moore can explain to you why personal hygiene is superfluous, and then you could eat me. Any questions?
Maricopa
that
County
was the
Sheriff's
kill shot.
Deputy Ted Nugent right there.
That was the kill shot,
true
and
American.
That was the evade. I evaded your projectile.
Sure.
You aim for the heart, and I dodged that son of a bitch like a prancing whitetail.
Kevlar. The man he's got Kevlar flowing through his
and
veins.
And by the way, let's go ahead. Want great radio? I know you want great radio. You
sure,
look like
I would
you.
Like I that, sure.
That is great radio.
Sure.
Let's analyze the question and my response.
Alrighty.
I dare anybody. You set it up on your radio show, Paul. I dare the world. I dare you punks who hate me because of what I just said. Come on to this radio station and dare to debate me, and I'll go Pierce Morgan on you. If you try to debate me, I will eat your family tree and shit sawdust, because you got nothing, and I got all the evidence, all the facts, all the truth, and all the logic on my side. Period.
You know, people think Ted is stupid. Like, they make this mistake. No, well, Pierce Morgan was one, Pierce was one of those guys. They think they're like, okay, at the time, you still had a full head of hair. So they're like, okay, here comes the long. It's the same mistake that Congress made when they brought Dee Snider in and Frank Zappa in.
Bingo.
Back in the day. They made the mistake because of the hair. They go, well, Ted must be stupid.
Paul, you're my hero because that is the ultimate reference. That is the ultimate reference because you know what Dee Snider is? Brilliant. He's a pragmatist. He's a thinker. He's in the asset column. You know what Frank Zappa was? He's brilliant. He was a pragmatist. He was a common sense guy. And if you try to debate Frank Zappa or Dee Snider or Ted Nugent or anybody with a brain about the right to speak your mind, we will eat your family tree and shit sawdust. Because the people who attack us got nothing. By the way, I'm a big fan of editing, so have a good day with that.
Yeah.
But don't you dare edit
out. We'll dump it out. Don't worry about it.
Don't you dare get rid of my belching the president's name, because never has there been a wiser use of a renewable resource than to belch the demon's name with a good gastronomical excess.
I believe you're on home field with a comment like that anyway in Arizona.
I would think so, yes. Joe.
How many badges do you have? Because you do have a Maricopa County Sheriff's Deputy
badge.
I do,
but let's be perfectly honest, and I love Joe Arpaio. He is America's Sheriff, and I appreciate being deputized. And I did swear in, and I know what the oath means because I took that oath for the first time in Lake County in 1982, which, unlike my Maricopa County badge, is a real badge. I'm a real deputy sheriff, and I have been since 1982 in Lake County, Michigan. I'm sure the Huffington Post and Mao Zedong and Rage Against the Machine and the Southern Poverty Law Center and MoveOn.org and Media Matters are all monitoring this and going, Nugent claims he's a law enforcement officer, and we did research it. He is. Anyhow, so I have to take that oath. I have to qualify as a Lake County deputy in Michigan every year, so I take it to heart. But my Michigan deputization is real, and the one here, not so much.
So it's like getting one of those honorary doctorates, right?
I think I'm not a big fan of honorary anything. I'm a big fan of the great Sheriff Joe Arpaio and my fellow Maricopa County Sheriff deputies. But I don't believe in – I'm not an honorary guitar player. I'm not an honorary American. I'm not an honorary deer hunter. I'm not an honorary dad. I'm not an honorary asset to America. I'm a real asset to America. So I take that oath that I took with the Sheriff Joe to heart. But in various jurisdictions across the country, it's a real deputy, not a honorary deputy.
So you're in town tonight at the Celebrity Theater.
I certainly am.
And it should be a good time. You got Mick Brown.
Should be a good time. It's a guaranteed.
I don't know. It's guaranteed, man. Will you give the money back if it's not?
I give him double the money back.
Look at him. A double money back guarantee.
But I know the punks that bought a ticket to try to get their double the money back are not being honest, so I will just scowl at them and eat their family tree and shit sawdust. But anyhow.
You eat a lot of sawdust.
We eat a lot of sawdust. But it's in my vapor trail. Sometimes they build little houses and sandcastles out of it, but I'm already in the next city.
Yeah, but sawdust is a vegetable, Ted.
It is.
Sawdust is.
It's in your cheese. It's in your craft.
It's a plant.
What is the cheese?
Yeah, the grated cheese.
Yes, it's grated cheese. Grated sawdust cheese. Maybe I should have Ted Nugent shitting sawdust grated auxiliary fiber.
I think it's something new, though, because I haven't heard this term sawdust used with so many things as I have. The other day, we did he hijacked my Facebook Live.
Right.
And he said on my Facebook Live that he eats my intestines every day and turns them into sawdust.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Paul.
That?
I don't think she's quite got that yet.
Right.
It's the trip to the intestines
Just the skin,
but
I think.
You didn't say intestines.
The skin is often the tastiest part of the chicken.
I did, because not only do I get high on saying goodbye to my dog and getting ready to crank people's faces into a puddle of foamy snot and hair with the greatest rhythm and blues and rock and roll band in the history of noise, but I also get high on just you know, coming up with stream of consciousness, lovey-dovey statements to my beautiful queen of the forest, Shemaine Nugent,
like eating her intestines.
Yeah, that's romance right there, Ted. You're nothing if not a romantic.
they call that Wang Dang Chitlins where I come from.
Yes.
You've never had an interview quite like this, have you?
Oh, no. Ted, you, trust me, I expected you. I was the one guy that was ready for you.
Oh, let me tell you.
The beautiful part about this is I'm a ringmaster in a circus of paraplegic mimes. I'm used to guys that are all over the place. You and me,
I think we've connected on a cerebral.
There's a good chance we're going to be friends after this. I'm not sure.
On a cerebral and an intestine level. But let me just say that you mentioned the concert. I mean, I'm a wild ass. I have so much fun. I scare most people, but not a lot of people. I set a world record recently, multiple times on Facebook, 36 million Facebookers. And I'm not even Beyonce. Now, I bounce a lot, but I'm not Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I set Facebook records is because I stink of truth, logic, common sense, goodwill and decency, and the dedication to be in the asset column of my life and your life. I would never take from you. I only provide. I planted another, 400 trees this spring, as I do every year since 1970. So your air quality is a direct result of me. Tom Morello, not so much. And I love Tom Morello. I'm not picking on him, but we'll talk about which machine they're raging against this week. My point being is that tonight at the Celebrity Theater, I really am... You may have noticed I'm a bit bubbly.
A little bubbly. Is it tough to be you 24/7?
No, I'm not, because with the dogs, it's natural. I'm a natural high. Sleep like a baby at night. But if actually I got some sleep, I'd really be dangerous. But in anticipation of the tour, I am literally inebriated on the anticipation to play this guitar, this Gibson Birdland, through these Blackstar amps with Jason Hartless on the drums and Greg Smith on the bass.
Look at all the plugs. You see the plugs?
Well, I am. I'm
in there?
Plugging my guys, Jason Hartless. I plug my bandmates more. I individually plug my bandmates more than all other bands combined since the dawn of electricity. My point being is that I am so humbled and driven by what Jason and my fellow Arizona dog, Mr. Mick Brown, what he did for years. I mean, I've always had the greatest musicians available to mankind. And as a guitar player who craves and just worships great guitar-driven music, to have this kind of rhythm section like Greg and Jason and Mick and Marco Mendoza and Cliff Davies and Rob DeLaGrange, I mean, I could go all the way back to the Amboy Dukes and the Lords and the Damn Yankees, Michael Cardelloni and Jack Blaze. My rhythm sections, I'm sure you've been to many mountaintops. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had the highest of highs in your life of gratification and family time and moments, sexual ecstasies. You can't begin to imagine, I would suspect, what I feel getting ready for a gig every night. And this year, as usual, we can only do two shows, then we need 2 days off because we need to rest. I don't. I play every night, 6 nights a week at least, and unless I can get them to book the 7th one. I play every night because I love this stuff. I love this music now more than when I was trying to be Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Little Richard in my garage in 1957. And to get ready to go on stage with what Jason does on the drums and Greg does on the bass guitar to my sacred songs. I consider my songs sacred representations of my musical dreams and my attitude and my spirit and my piss and vinegar and the whole independence and raw primal exaltations. So it's not a gig. It's not a job. It's not a duty. It is literally the pulse of my life. And to do it any place is awesome, but the Celebrity Theater right in your face. You know, I'm the master of guitar feedback, but my fellow rock and roll lovers are the masters of human feedback. And all my songs are a direct result of this. Tonight will be my 6,519th concert of my life, going all the way back to sock hops and frat parties and pool parties and a gig at a malt shop on Warwick and Grand River in Detroit, 1958. Swear to God. Waltz malt shop, by the way. And my payment? 2 chocolates.
Were they worth it?
Absolutely. I played Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry. You kidding me? I got the bad deal out of it. So it was worth it to them. So I love this stuff now more than ever. I'm 67.7 years clean and sober. I'm stoked on pure venison and the love of my dogs and my wife, Shemaine, and my family, my team, my band, my crew. Everybody around me is such a positive force that the intensity of my music isn't a Ted Nugent thing. It's an accumulation of a life where I have tuned my radar to the maximum receivability of all indicators and all pulsations and all electrodes and the thought of that deer that's out of range and how I can get him into range and how I can aim small, miss small, and put a Nugent arrow through the pump station of unsuspecting herbivore providing backstraps forever. These are the kinds of highs that come out in my music, why 50-some years later, I'm going to have another sold-out tour. So I'm pretty good with words. You may have noticed that even just in the last few moments.
No, the good news is I don't get to get a word in edgewise, which is great. I'm ripping this company off today.
I'll get you two malts.
This is easy. I got the day off.
I'll get you two chocolate malts. It'll all be worth it. In fact, they're on their way here. I'll end it temporarily by telling you, thank you for letting me express myself on your radio. Thank you for looking like you care about what I'm saying, because I have a feeling that you love the music too.
Oh, yeah.
And that the music drove you to want to be in radio.
Well, I'm a failed musician. Anybody that tells you differently. Anybody that does this for a living on this side of the microphone is
a guy
who
failed completely.
No. I was doing just fine, and then Nirvana happened, and it was all over because I'm not that bummed out, and I look terrible in flannel. It doesn't thin me. So
yeah, let's piss and moan.
No, it was
about nothing.
It was over pretty quick for me. The industry changed, and I thought, okay, backup plan. Well, I can do this for a living. Any monkey can do this for a living.
But how cute is it that all those changes took place over the last 55 years of my performing? And here I am in Arizona playing the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix on, what is this, July 1st, 2016? And so they can go ahead and change. You can have your fashions. You can pierce different body parts and the tattoos. And I think that's all cute, and I'm not knocking it, to each his own. But I'm still Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Little Richard, Howlin' Wolf, James Brown, Wilson Pickett, Motown. The soul and the spirit of my music, the defiance and the attitude and the fun factor of my music, I would love it wherever it comes from. And I've got it from ZZ, and I got it from Van Halen, I got it from Aerosmith, and I got it from Montrose, and I got it from Heart and from Journey and from Foreigner to some degree, and I get it from Foo Fighters sometimes, and even though they're little monkeys, I like that Green Day thing sometimes. But nobody delivers this firestorm of soulful American R&B rock and roll like Jason and Greg and I. And if I wasn't in this band, I'd follow these guys all over the world just to watch them, especially that guitar player. I want to figure out how the hell he does that.
Now, you mentioned you're 67.7 years old.
67, yes.
67.7, and you've been doing this for over 50 years. We lost Scotty Moore this week, and we've lost some significant musicians over the past couple months.
What a hero of mine.
How aware of your own mortality are you?
Very much so, in that I don't dwell on. In fact, I would have never thought about it if I didn't feel it from my kids.
Right.
As Glenn Frey dies and Lemmy dies and Prince dies and they're all my age and Meatloaf hits the dust up in Saskatchewan and I had both of my knees replaced and I had belly surgery. I had a herniated umbilical cord, so I had that.
Had it done. And so it's cute to blow bubbles out of your belly button.
I usually prefer the ass.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, but we're just talking to my grandkids today about certain diets will help you blow ass bubbles.
Beautiful.
Which is another indication.
Good morning, everybody.
Which is another indication that I am the world's greatest grandpa.
I would think so.
All my children have machine guns.
That's my just good parenting.
My point being that I can sense that after one of my peers, wait a minute, I don't have any peers.
Come on, Ted.
When my peers drop like flies, usually through fault of their own, accumulated fault of their own choices, which is 98% of all illnesses and problems in the human species, I get these emotional, how you doing, Dad, and how you feeling, and it's too bad. You make sure that you get ready for this tour and don't fall down like Meatloaf. And I go, well, I'm gained a little bit of weight because of the surgeries, and I've slowed down a little bit. But every day of my life, Paul, I run the dogs. I run a trap line. I hung up my 146th coon yesterday. I'm cleansing the songbird and the ground nesting animals' lives. And so that's a lot of work. I fill the feeders. I fill the corn bags. I do the fences, and I work on my ranch, and I sight in my guns, and I video them, and I work on my trucks. And I'm always busy. I'm very active. Plus, I got my 30-some-year-old Murray Baja 10-speed all rehabilitated, and I'm riding that all over the damn place. So I'm way more active than most 68-year-old guys, and my diet has always been perfect, just wild game, pure venison. And I've been clean and sober my whole life, so there's been no poisons at all going into my sacred temple. So I know I'm way ahead of the race, and my mom and dad had a great constitution, and if it wasn't for drinking and smoking, they'd still be with us.
Right.
And I've never drank. There's no cigarettes, no tobacco, no drugs, no fat girlfriends. I really have quality of life figured out, because that stuff will kill you.
Does Ted Nugent belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Are you kidding me? Are you maybe instead of Patti Smith, or maybe Grandmaster Flash, or what, ABBA? Maybe I could go in there instead of ABBA.
See, here's the deal.
I want to hear a good laugh. That you gotta love that.
Look, I'm trying to be the straight guy here. Look, trust me, you're so busy laughing at your own stuff, I couldn't get a laugh in edgewise.
Can you not laugh at me replacing ABBA?
You're the big. No, I wouldn't have a problem with that. Because it was interesting. Steve Miller just gets in, and he's a guy that I put in your category. And this is the thing. There's like, in 1976, there were five guitar heroes: Steve Miller, Peter Frampton, Eric Clapton, Ace Frehley, Ted Nugent. Those were the guys. That was where the word guitar hero came from. Jimmy Page wasn't a guitar hero. He was a member of Led Zeppelin.
That's right.
You know, Joe Perry wasn't a guitar hero. He was a member of Led Zeppelin. And Eddie Van Halen hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Richie Blackmore and Deep Purple were a mess. So there were five guitar heroes. And yet...
Oh, thank you for that.
And yet, one of them isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You're ready for some great radio?
I think Frampton's not in either.
I don't think he is, and he should be.
Right.
But here's I think everybody listening, all the real gung-ho music lovers listening already know what I'm going to tell you, and you do too, but...
Probably.
I will
going to say it anyway.
I will say it. It needs to be said. I've been on the board of directors with the highest votes in the history of the National Rifle Association for the last 20-some years.
Shocking.
I have dedicated my life to counter the insidious anti-American culture war by the left that would disarm us tonight if they could.
Right.
They actually know that most innocent lives are lost in gun-free zones, and these freaks want more of them.
Right.
It's indescribable on any spiritual level,
right,
intelligent, intellectual level, or historical level, on any human level. I have fought these bastards all my life, and I've always won. If you haven't Googled me with Pierce Morgan, you need to do so and put real butter on your popcorn.
But he's an idiot.
But that's my point. That's what they represent. He represents the anti-gun voice perfectly.
Right.
They thought they were going to get me. I'm not gettable. And so here's what I'm getting at. You know who's one of the biggest financial donors to the gun control movement? Jan Wenner. I think it was just before he went off with his boyfriend's ass in hand when he left his wife and kids, but it was around that time. Anyhow, he's always donated massive amounts of money to the gun confiscation cause. I'm on the board of directors of the NRA, and he knows he can't debate me. All those people on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, their board of directors, not all of them, but all of them are either viciously anti-freedom, anti-guns, anti-Ted Nugent, or they're too pussified to stand up and counter such a ridiculous stance when it's supposed to be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It isn't supposed to be about politics. I think Green Day's politics are just this side of Cuban, but I think they belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because of their rock and roll. Stop me when I lose you. So that I'm not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is because the dopey, over-dopey left in charge under the control of a Jan Wenner, they hate, they don't believe in self-defense. They don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't believe in individual right to keep and bear arms. So they hate me with a passion, and I couldn't be more proud. The bottom line is I'm in the most important Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on planet Earth. The greatest rock and roll loving people in the world keep coming to my concerts, and every day on Facebook, tens of millions of people celebrate every lyric and every song and every guitar lick, not just of mine, but of all those artists that deliver this uninhibited, piss and vinegar, primal, defiant, spirited rock and roll music in all its various forms, from the grunge to the rhythm and blues tinged and the rhythm and blues driven like mine and Aerosmith and ZZ's. But I already am in the most important hall of fame on planet Earth. I'm embraced and supported by massive throngs of real music lovers, and that's all I need.
And that's the answer to my first question, which was, how much has your musical legacy suffered because of your mouth?
Bingo.
And that's the answer to the question.
That is, yeah. And
it took us 26 minutes to get there,
no,
but we got there.
The journey is called radio. Why be concise when you can be verbose? That's what I always say. No, because we've talked about since we sat down, is that there is a culture war that hates the basic pillars of what makes America the last and the only best place in the world. And it starts with the Bill of Rights. And I believe in all of them. And my haters don't. My haters want safe zones where you can't say things that might ruffle their feathers. Well, I'm not into ruffling feathers. I'm into plucking your ass and putting you on the grill. So I believe in standing up for the... And ultimately, I have to make this statement. I don't do it for me.
As opposed to the other ones that were meaningless and nonsensical.
No, they're all for this reason. I'm a free man. Don't tread on me. It resonates. Stand up for what you believe in. Obviously, these are such entrenched truisms of the American life. I spend some time every day of my life, including this morning and yesterday on the way here, with heroes of the military, either on the phone or in emails or talking about guns or talking about a rally or talking about training or talking about the special forces and the Delta Force that invited me to join them this year, the first civilian so invited. And I've saluted so many flag-draped coffins that very little of what I'm saying here, Paul, emanates from within me without the inspiration of better human beings that I will identify as the heroes of the U.S. military who have sacrificed their legs and their arms, and they knew they might, they knew they probably would, yet they still went to fight for the oath they took to the U.S. Constitution. I represent that. Marcus Luttrell sent me a text, a video. I'll show it to you. Marcus Luttrell, lone survivor, emotionally telling me I'm his hero because I used the freedoms his buddies died to provide.
And now somebody that's hearing you say this is going, but Ted, you didn't go to Nam.
Oh, of course I didn't. I didn't get drafted, and I didn't knock at the door. I was 18 years old. I went down for my physical. I got a draft card and went on tour. Never heard from him.
All right.
Case closed.
I'm just
that's the story.
That is the response.
That's the truth.
That's the
response
people
get. I get one out of about 6 million on my Facebook. You're Chicken Hawk. Well, when I was 18, numbnut. I made up a story for some drooling, dopey, drug-infested maggot for High Times magazine because nobody ever got...
I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't call
you
on that.
Devil's advocate.
I have to.
And when you bring it up, it's not just a devil's advocate.
Right.
It's the devil's point of view.
Right.
So I love that because I can eat it alive. 2 weeks ago, we played our first concert for the Sonic Baptism Tour.
Right.
In New Hampshire. The reports in the media is that I didn't show up due to lack of ticket
sales.
You
didn't sell enough tickets. They were trying to sell for $5 a pop and couldn't sell.
We showed up.
That was the word.
We played it. They said, and I had four times the attendance of a real iconic musical legend, Steven Tyler. I had four times the audience. I had four times what Bret Michaels. I should hope so. But they reported I didn't show up for lack of ticket sales, but Brett and Steven did a great job. I had four times as many people, and we showed up. And then they said Dog Eat Dog was performed in a lifeless, plodding fashion. We didn't play Dog Eat Dog.
Well, that's pretty lifeless.
It wasn't on the
set list. It's lacking a little life when you don't play it,
Ted. A little life when you don't play it. It's the only way I can perform anything lifeless is when it's not performed. So you see where I'm getting at?
Sure.
They never got the band members' names right. They never got the venue right. They never got the... Nugent, with his famous ES-335, who doesn't know I play a Gibson Birdland? And that was a guitar magazine.
Well, for a while you were playing Paul Reed Smith, though.
Well,
you were
with the Yankees. In between Birdlands.
Yeah.
But if you were you sound like a guitar guy.
Yeah.
Isn't it like a giant bolt of lightning? What guitar would you relate Ted Nugent to? Boom!
Yeah.
Gibson Birdland.
Right. So and going against the grain of a guitar guy that plays a semi-hollow body.
Grain. I don't go down the road less traveled. I find no roads and I go there.
Right.
And so my, you can
that's
see
where
my,
the feedback comes from, Ted.
Have you noticed
you can take credit for it, but the guitar is part of it.
Write
it's
this
in the
down.
Game.
Write this down. Paul has informed me that the Gibson Birdland, it would be the spruce. Could I insert the spruce
hand-carved? Yes, absolutely.
Okay. It might be the hand-carved
it might be
spruce
that.
Top that brings
it. It's actually the chamber underneath.
Paul promised.
And the magnets.
You know, some of the guys stuffed those holes. And they go, well, I was feeding back. And I went, that, of course it was. So my point being, I'm getting to this point. So why would I give this, I mean, literally spittle in the corner of his mouth, boogers coming out of his nose, asking me why I didn't go to Vietnam.
Right.
Why would I waste the truth on such a maggot? So you read a lot of Hit Parader and a lot of Cream Magazine where, what was the Natty Bumpo? What was the guy they made the movie out of? You know his name. I do, too, but he's such a jerkball. Anyhow, I can't remember his name. He's the famous writer for Cream Magazine. He
right.
told him, he said that Ted Nugent and particularly the song Stranglehold would be the last nail in my career, in the coffin of my career.
Not even my favorite song on that album.
Queen of the Forest?
Sneaking Cowboys.
Which we're playing tonight. Which you got to promise to come. You
oh,
got to
sure.
see it tonight.
Well, sure.
It's insane. But anyhow, my point is that people quote an article from High Times magazine where I made up the most outrageous story in the history of outrageous stories, because I'm really, really good at that,
yeah.
knowing that if I told him the truth, he wouldn't have got it right anyway.
Wait a minute. You were the guy that just said you're a truth-telling American.
I am,
but
not to maggots. Not to maggots who lie and say I didn't show up in New Hampshire when I got off the stage an hour 40 minutes later sweating my balls off from one of the greatest rock and roll performances in the history of electricity, and they claimed I didn't show up. This is funnier than
that's
Richard
a bigger affront to him than not going to Vietnam. That right there is.
Of
you're
course
more,
it
you're
is because I didn't
that.
Go to Nam because I was 18 year old and I never heard of the Bataan Death March. If I'd have been educated properly, I'd have gone, yeah, let's go kill them sons of bitches.
Right.
But I didn't. I was 18. I had a band. I was on the road 350 concerts a year. I make no apologies because you know I've more than done since then,
right.
made up for it.
Sure.
And the heroes of the military surround my life, reminding me of that every fucking day. And I stood on the tarmac in Fallujah and I saluted hundreds of flag draped coffins, the only civilian ever allowed to, because the Marines and the Air Force and the Navy and the U.S. Army, they stood at my side thanking me for using the freedoms that all those flag-draped coffins provided.
Oh, and that's the thing that
so
I think
maybe,
people miss that, though. One of the things people miss that is those guys fight for your right to disagree.
Yes, which is what I'm doing. I'm disagreeing with my government
right.
because they're violating their oath to the Constitution.
Right.
I mean,
who doesn't
know this stuff?
I've hit a nerve.
This is great radio, by the way. I want a copy of this.
It was at 33 minutes into the interview.
It's going to be on.
Oh, really? It was at 33 minutes into the interview that Ted lost his shit.
Not even close.
You... Wait, I thought it happened when we walked in the room.
No.
Have you seen me go for the belt yet?
Not yet.
I haven't lost anything. I am so...
What Ted doesn't know is I'm left-handed and quick, too.
I'm cool. I'm as cool.
You
look up
so.
Cool, calm, and collective, and you'll see me with two middle fingers on fire.
No, it's all good.
It's all good.
This is my favorite. I love interviews like this. I love being able to sit in with a guy... first of all, who can take it, because a lot of guys can't take it. And then a lot of guys come into the studio.
Some things I'd rather not talk about if it's okay with you. Bunch of pussies.
And there are some people that Ted walks into the studio with, and they're like, they have no idea what they're getting into. There are a lot of guys that have no clue.
You think?
No clue. No clue. Piers Morgan had no clue.
He had no clue.
He had no clue.
And there's a lot of guys. And again, and I use the same reference. The U.S. Senate had no clue. When Dee walked in and when Frank Zappa walked in. And give credit to John Denver, too.
Sure.
When those
and
guys,
I do.
They make...
What
they
a
make,
great team, by the way.
But they make an assumption. What's the worst assumption that people make about Ted Nugent?
I don't think it comes down to assumptions anymore. You know, if you got clueless zombies everywhere. Just watch the reporter on the street asking him where, you know, the Grand Canyon is, and they say Paris. You know, there's such dumbing down of America complete everywhere that those people can assume whatever they want. When I'm walking down the street, when I had the giant lion mane of a hair, And they
some of us still yes. rock at that.
Well, I took mine out because I was dragging too many deer through the brush and getting my ponytail caught and bringing
home.
It is
a bitch. You get deer flies.
Bitch.
Love to nest in this stuff.
I'm going to walk behind you, pal. I just on a whim, what, 4 years ago now, I think. Three or four. I just said, called Shemaine. I said, get that fine ass wench with the scissors. Come on over. We're chopping this prick off. Anyhow, a whim. Hair means zero. I have a list of about 10 million really important things in life. Hair ain't on it. So I don't think there's any raw assumptions that could be given any credence or any credit whatsoever because of the level of cluelessness that exists in our species today. But those who There's two main camps, and the number one camp that matters is those that actually put forth effort to do research and find out the truth.
Right.
And come to my Facebook and actually hear it right from me what happened in the draft.
Right.
Or what happened in New Hampshire, or any pick any one of them. Or that I didn't tell the Native Americans to go back where they came from because here's a clue. They're from here. So they attribute quotes to me that I've never said. I would never say in a 180 degrees counter to my core beliefs. And they do it all the time. The racist, I'm anything but a racist. I'm almost black. They call me an anti-Semite. I just had my bar mitzvah. What is the thing when they do the circumcision? I do it at 30 yards, no charge.
Right. You're a Moyle.
They claim I'm homophobic.
You're Olive Moyle.
They say that I hate gay people. You got to be kidding me. I wrote hit songs with Desmond Child, and we hugged and almost kissed. And I toured with Toby Keith, and we got along fine.
Allegedly. See, you have better lawyers than I do, Ted. Careful.
See, now that's going to get to Toby's kid.
Sure it is. And who's going to get blamed? I'm the conduit through which your message flows today.
And his manager's going to go.
So you get to leave, and I got to sit here tomorrow or Monday.
Toby's manager's going to go, did you hear Nugent said you're gay? And then you were supposed to go, is Toby gay? And I was supposed to go, I don't think so.
Right. And then you just leave it open to interpretation. Sure. Thank you, Ted.
So my point is.
Thank you for that.
My point is that all these lies against me, a person with any sense of decency and honesty knows their lies, knows that the media lies, know that you can't keep your doctor if you want to. You can't keep your health plan if you want to. It wasn't about a video in Benghazi. We don't have ISIS contained, and you do have to identify the. I mean, so smart people and I get along great. Come in on the tarmac here in Phoenix. Wonderful people. Hey, Uncle Ted, how's it going? I'm glad you're here. Going to the military base. Everybody, going to Mocha. Yeah, Uncle Ted, go to Whole Foods in Mill Valley, California. Pierce nipples everywhere. Hey, Uncle Ted, I'm getting my grandma a gun. What do you recommend? So there's a love fest out there. You got to witness it. It's stunning. There's only one thing more dangerous than a sow grizzly with cubs. Ted Nugent with more confidence. And I get so much confidence.
Impossible.
Impossible.
Impossible. Does not happen.
We're working on it.
That's your problem, Ted, is what you need is a life coach.
Oh.
You need a life coach.
I need a life coach.
Of course. Well.
Are you better than this?
No, again.
I don't need a life coach. I'm my own life coach. I got life dicked. And those that don't. Hate me for it. My point is, and I'm always coming to a point.
At some point.
Is that presumptions will always be embarrassing.
Sure.
To presume is embarrassing.
Right.
To assume is irresponsible. So those who are so irresponsible, I'm not here to fix them. If they want to pay attention, my very actions will fix them. Those that already know the truth stand shoulder to shoulder with me on self-evident truth, common sense, logic, being the best that you can be, earning your own way, believing in self-defense, aim small, miss small, and all of its ramifications. So I have an American camp that is wall-to-wall, unbelievably wonderful people. And I guess I could put it this way, Paul, in the most serious moment of this interview. If you come across a person in your professional life or your personal life who has been contacted more times than I have since 68, before there was a Make-A-Wish Foundation or any of those such charities, whose families have contacted them to take their 6 or 7-year-old little son or daughter on their last wish before they die, I can't count how many times I've done that. If I pass the screening process for a mother and father saying goodbye to their dying son or daughter, I dare anybody to come up with a more demanding screening process than that. So my confidence cup runneth over, because if they think I'm okay, Paul, guess what? I'm okay. Period.
So when do we get a third damn Yankees record? See what I did
Boy,
there?
Yes.
I just completely, that was
perfect.
That was
perfect.
A very touching moment there that I ruined.
No, you didn't ruin it, because the damn Yankees were part of some of that. We hosted some of those kids.
Right.
Some of them weren't kids. Some of them were adults.
Now, will you do that?
You know, our opening volley here today was celebrating the incredible talent and gifted virtuosos that I've been surrounded with forever.
Sure.
I mean, I was on the phone with Mitch Ryder, Johnny Bonanjak, and Jimmy McCarty 2 days ago, the original Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. I keep in touch with these guys. The inspiration, this would be a whole other radio show. But Tommy Shaw, Michael Cardelloni, Jack Blades, another perfect. These guys are so talented, it's stupid. I mean, they are music. They are so musical. They are so soulful. I could whip into any James Brown or Motown classic, Wilson Pickett, Sam and Dave, I don't care, Lightning Hopkins. And Tommy Shaw, within a nanosecond, boom, he knows the song. Jack knows the song. Now, Michael was somewhat new as a young guy, but he knew the groove. He could feel our groove right away. So when you get to collaborate with those talented people, you want to just not go hunting and not do anything else. You want to just pursue this musical stuff. But because Tommy is so dedicated to his sticks, and Jack Blades is so dedicated to his songwriting, Michael Cardelloni has been the unbelievable drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd since he played drums for me in 94, after the damn Yankees last tour in 93, that these guys are so dedicated to their given musical visions, as am I, and because of my ridiculous energy, I mean, it's just stupid. I have to put down the guitar. I never put it down, but I have to put down the touring intensity. And I got to go climb a tree and stab something. I mean, I really got to shut up.
Isn't Shemaine right here? See what I did?
I don't need a tree.
I just made it inappropriate.
I just made it inappropriate.
Yay. And he didn't reach. So
vice versa. I literally have to shut up and take breaths and not hyperventilate with 12 crescendos per song, which is my forte. And so my show is called Spirit of the Wild, because there is a soul-cleansing power in nature if you really wallow in it, if you really give yourself all to it. And there's no more totality in nature than conducting your predatorship.
Well, we need more Ted Nugent in a helicopter dropping nets on people running through fields.
That was so adorable.
More of that.
We do need more of that. I concur.
That is reality TV that I could watch.
Now, see, but you just said it. Would you rather the damn Yankees made a record or I got a helicopter and I netted hippies?
Why can't we have both? See, if you'd have spent less time on VH1 doing that super group show and more
That was interesting.
Interesting's a word.
Well, at least with the super group. And God bless them all. Playing with Jason Bonham, what a thrill. And Scott, what a thrill. And all those guys.
He mentioned Jason and Scott and then it ended pretty quick. Yeah.
Well, what's the...
Evan?
Evan was great. Right. I liked Evan. I'm not so much into the rah-rah kind of music as that. But anyhow, he was a great guy, real musical. And Sebastian was flaky as flaky can be, but he's got incredible talent.
Right.
And if you could milk it and cultivate it, it was certainly a musical joy. That being said, the greatest thing about the supergroup show, not besides the paycheck,
Ted does it for the money. Don't believe the whole. I'm a great American and I love music and I'm doing.
I'm a great American and I love music, but there's a price tag, mofo. You want me to sell out your place? That's my money.
Right.
Anyhow,
I love what I do, but I don't do it for free.
Yes. Well,
Gene Simmons and Ted Nugent.
I do it for free a lot, but only for charities. But anyhow, was the chance during the supergroup thing in Vegas that Joe Bonamassa invited me down to that club. Did you see that cut? That take?
Right.
And he and I sat on two stools, no band, with a couple amps, a couple guitars. And there's another example that guitar, soul is alive and well thanks to a Joe Bonamassa. And don't forget this name, Chris Duarte. There's a guitarist from Texas named Chris Duarte who's got so much soul. Not to mention that Brad Whitford and Derek St. Holmes are on tour with Whitesnake, two world-class 10 guitarists that don't get the credit they deserve.
Sure.
And the Zach Wilds and the Ricky Medlocks, and I could go on and on and on, but that jam with Joe Bonamassa, it was so young Ted at the C Blues Club in Detroit in 1959, revisiting the original B.B. Albert, Freddie King, Lonnie Mack, Grunt, Paul Butterfield, Mike Bloomfield. Are you still with me? Are
oh, yeah,
you
no,
kidding?
I'm with you. No, I get
oh.
it. No, Bonamassa is one of the few guys that gets it, and
yes.
he's way too young to be as good as he is.
How about that?
So he gets it, like, and now they're putting Black Country Communion back together,
well,
which is nice because that brings Jason Bonham back into it.
Yes.
And Glenn Hughes, who's got a throat.
Yes.
So life is good.
We love all this. And the fact that Anton Figg was chosen drummer for Bonamassa in many times.
Right.
Anton's one of the most underrated drummers that ever lived.
Played on half a dozen Kiss records, and nobody knows it.
Well, he's weaned up. He and I have jammed together. We did a Les Paul tribute at the Les Paul's Club. And Anton got up and played with me for only the third time. I'd played with him on Letterman a couple times, and it was just a mutual love fest of all those original black gods that turned us on to this kind of music. But when I played with Joe Bonamassa, you're right. It does prove that he's much too young to be as good as he is. But may I? How old are you?
48.
48. I know you respect your elders, so I will get on my elder stool right now.
Here comes Ted Nugent, 20 years older than me.
And as Bonamassa is indeed one of the all-time greats, I see the youth. It's not quite dirty enough. There's a way.
There's no stink on him. He's got all of this skill, but none of the smell.
Thank you. Well, then you do know. Then you do respect your elders, and you agree with your elders. He needs a little bit more Billy Gibbons, and he needs a little bit more Freddie King. He's got the BB King down, but Freddie went into tangents, as did Albert, you know, overbending and not, and the Stevie Ray Vaughan magic of not quite getting to the note, and it cried. Journey Center of Mine, ooh, da da da. I was only 18 years old. I mean, I don't know where I got that. But when I jammed with the Letterman Band, Paul Schaefer came up and hugged me. I thought it was another gay rights thing. And he said, the opening guitar solo note in Journey to the Center of the Mind is the greatest musical note in the history of the world. And I went, he's got a point there. Because I was a kid, but I knew because of all the black influences that you don't really, if you're heading for an A, don't quite get there. Just short of, which Stevie Ray Vaughan was the master, better than Albert. Better than Freddie, I dare I say, I think because of the tonal quality. But I learned that, and when Bonamassa gets to that next grunt and primal, he's got grunt, he's got primal. Joe, if you're listening, I'm not picking on you. I'm just telling you that there's a new level before you go into that incredible flurry that almost sounds too close to a scale for me. I one guy goes, what scale do you use? And I go, well, the one I hang my deer on. I want to see how much it weighs. No, what on your guitar? I go, I don't use scales. I know my guitar doesn't weigh enough. What scales do you play? I go, never learned a scale. Don't know any scales. I probably bump into them on occasion because of the configuration of the neck and my hands. But
Ted Nugent plays in skeleton key. He finds a note and it fits.
That's absolutely. I am Sun Ra Yusef Lateef. Look it up. I am John Coltrane of the Gibson Birdland. I know I'm resonating with you right
sure.
here, but a lot of people do know what I'm talking about, but a lot of people should probably go Google that stuff. So, yes, uncharted territory awaits Joe. Now, he's gone to much. He's been to many mountaintops, and he's gone to valleys where a lot haven't, but you and I will both recognize, and the next time we see him at Red Rocks, or one of those great features that I just genuflect at the altar of Joe Bonamassa. Just a great, gifted, soulful talent. But I'm waiting for that next nastiness, that next emotional crying moment that doesn't end up on a scale.
I think, and I'm not now, I'm in no position to criticize any musician. However, I think but the difference with the issue with Bonamassa is he's never missed a rent payment.
He hasn't been hurt enough.
Whereas Stevie Ray Vaughan
yes.
was homeless.
Hurt. And
but
heroin.
Joe Bonamassa has never missed a rent payment.
Yep.
Joe Bonamassa had it all handed to him. Don't get me wrong.
He put in the time,
but he doesn't have. There's no desperation in Joe Bonamassa.
Makes a difference.
Yes, no doubt about it. A musician that's going to play the blues? Absolutely.
Nobody will ever touch Keith Richards because no one could survive where Keith is gone.
Right.
And his music reflects that. And my passion and my angst and my anger and my joy and my uninhibitedness and my sheer abandon and defiance sounds like the solo in Dog Eat Dog. It sounds like that stranglehold stabbing licks. Row, row. Shut out. Fuck you. That's what those notes. Fuck you. That's what those notes are saying. Did he have to do that? Beth, what the hell was that lick? Did he have to do that? You don't start in the key of A minor on an F note, do you?
I didn't figure it out
until I went in. It was a take one guitar solo, and I said, "I'm gonna play a solo on my rhythm guitar track, guys, just to show you where it comes up and down before the bolero." And so I went in with the Birdland on a kind of a rhythm tone. To play the, because it's an extended jam, and I wanted them to follow me, and they did beautifully. Cliff Davies, God rest his soul. Rob Grange, God, what an incredible talent. Another perfect example of why I'm here. But when I played that solo, I'm hitting notes I never had played those patterns in my life. Diddy, daddy, 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 daddy.
Is that how it goes?
I never played that before. I'd never done that. I said, that was, even when I'm playing, I'm going, what? That was really cool. I'm going to have to remember to do that some other time. But when we went in and played it, Tom Werman and Tony Reale and Lou Futterman, the team in the studio, they went, that was stunning. That was, you need to hear that solo. That you need to keep that. And Tom Werman actually said, with a little editing, that will be the solo of a lifetime. I said, if you edit that, I will put your children in a blender.
And with that, I think our 5 minutes are up.
So my point is a stream of consciousness, total confidence in your history, your musical tutelage, the inspirations that you've just absolutely insisted on all your life, from Short Skirts to Train Wrecks to jamming with B.B. King, jamming with Jimi Hendrix, jamming with Rick Derringer, and jamming with all these Mitch Ryder before they were Mitch Ryder, and watching Johnny Bonanczyk's foot. Geez. So all this musical orgy of my life, it manifests itself in those musical moments. And I'm so proud of those guitar licks and those patterns and those solos that I played, because I didn't construct them. They were all take one, maybe take two, because I fumbled onto a great pattern that I wanted to repeat more than one time. But any guitar player out there, we're talking about the next level for Joe, don't play scales. It's much too Caucasian. You don't want to play scales, and don't make every note perfect. Make them nasty. Make them emotional and honest and raw, and don't be afraid to stay on one note. Omaha by, listen, my friend, the name of the band, Purple something or
New
Moby Grape.
Oh, Moby Grape.
Listen to the guitars, ES-335 through a Fender Twin. 65 maybe, 66. But listen, he plays Mike Bloomfield. Play the first Paul Butterfield Blues Band record with Mike Bloomfield playing Killing Floor and Born in Chicago with that 58 Les Paul. Listen to that stuff. And I know all these things. I know what guitars they use. I know what size their picks were. I know which amps. I know what speakers were in the amps. I studied this stuff like a maniac. I made it my passion in life to meet these people and look at their gear and find out what does that sound. And then when I discovered the Birdland, a la Jimmy McCarty and Mitch Ryder, when they were Billy Lee and the Rivieras opening up at the Wall Lake Casino, summer of 1960, where it was Billy Lee and the Rivieras, who changed their name to Mitch Ryder 2 years later, and Martha and the Vandellas and Gene Pitney and my band, the Lourdes. Summer 1960.
Ted, and you're old.
I'm an old man.
You're old.
And my wheelchair is motivated. That lives with me too. We're going to play Jenny Take a Ride tonight. We're gonna.
Nice.
Because I'm showing where I'm playing Johnny B. Goode to show him where it all came from, so nobody ever forgets. Because we didn't invent this stuff. Howlin', Muddy, Lightning, Mitch, certainly Bo, Chuck, Little Richard, Jerry Lee. They invented this stuff. Lonnie Mack, Duane Eddy. They invented Les Paul. They invented B.B., Freddie, Albert. I did a tour a few years back called Black Power, and somebody claimed it was racist. When you pay tribute to your black heroes, now in the culture war of political correctness, you're a racist. It's indescribably goofy. It's like Planet of the Apes meets the Cuckoo's Nest, Clockwork Day Glow puce. Anyhow, I digress, but it's awfully entertaining. So that's what you'll witness with the Nugent Band, Jason Heartless, Greg Smith, my new Black Star amps. As a guitar player, you got to come early. I'm going to show you these amps. I've always had the greatest guitar tone in the world. I know this. This is uncharted territory. I've never had a fatter, richer, greasier. It's like sonic barbecue. It's like fat, rich, crisp, but just like charging rhinos up your ass. It's just delirium. I'm so excited about this tour. I can hardly stand myself.
Tonight at the Celebrity Theater, Ted Nugent, I think I'm a little tired now.
Well, you've been at it a long time.
I've been talking for all this time.
You are a verbose son of a bitch,
boy,
Paul.
Am I, yeah.
Neander this, pal.
Nice. Ted
Well, Nugent. Is this okay? But, you know,
no,
I don't get
good.
To see you. So you're here every day. I'm only here one day. You need to get a lot of tape on me.
Oh, no, I got enough. Ted is good for a quote or two. So thanks for coming by, man. You know, we appreciate the time. Please don't shoot anybody on the way out.
Not me. But I got to tell you know what the knockout game is, don't you?
Go ahead.
It's attempted murder.
Right.
So that's all you need to know.
Sure, felonious assault.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, I was in fear for my life.
Yeah.
He told me he was going
to
kill me, and
I believed him. And I hearken back to Dimebag Darrell, so you might not want to charge my stage.
No, I get that.
Okay, then there's my public service announcement for the day. Save your life. Don't mess with Ted.
All right. Tonight at the Celebrity Theater, Ted Nugent, thank you for coming by, man.
My plan. Thank you for letting me nugify the airwaves of Phoenix. By the way.
As if I had a choice.
Well, yeah. Did they force you to do this? And what did I sign here? Classic Rock KSLX. All right. I got my name on there. That'll be bulletproof now.
you were talking about how great you are, Ted.
Yes, I was talking about how incredible Great White Buffalo is because of Greg and Jason and because of the Native American lifestyle I live that understands responsible consumerism and that we always put more back than we take. Anybody doesn't get that can eat my ass.
Right.
Anyhow, it's delicious, by the way. So Great White Buffalo will go places where Mozart and Bach didn't even dream of. They had no idea you could do this stuff. And I promise you, those of us that love and cherish and crave killer guitar music, there's a lot of great ones out there. There'll never be Ted fucking Nugent. This stuff is so good, I can hardly get next to myself.
All right, Ted, thanks for coming by, man. Your guys, they want you out of here.